And welcome to minute 127 of season 8 of Movie Around Minute, the nearly podcast where we foobar our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Matthew Simpson, a freelance film and television critic. Welcome back to the show, Matthew.
Oh, once again, thank you for having me. This is it's a very fun show. I always enjoy being on it.
And I enjoy having you on it, too. Even when we're talking about blood on a CB radio and stuff like that. Question: I'm having to find the right things to talk about. So, minute 127 begins with Miller thinking of his wife and the rose bushes, and ends with Miller getting closer to Ryan. So. We ended things yesterday with, we had Ryan finish his story and then ask Miller for his story. And Miller just basically said, nope, I'm not going to tell you that story. And this minute begins with, we get maybe 5 seconds just shining on Tom Hanks, on Miller, just thinking to himself about his wife and the rose bushes and stuff like that, which yesterday we talked about the fact that what I found in the novelization about that Miller said more. I get the impression that part of the reason that they probably cut that was because of the fact that this is a man of a few words. As opposed to what he probably was a very talkative in his real life. But here he's, because I guess he's being secretive about who he is and stuff like that. So he just wants to keep things to himself. So I think that might be part of the reason why they might have cut it out.
I think it plays into the earlier thing where he, earlier in the film, through the whole film, really, they talk about nobody knows where he's from. And when he finally reveals where he's from, he says that, back home, when he tells what he does, people are like, yeah, that makes sense. And when he says it here, people don't say that effectively. And he wonders how much he's changed as a result of the war. And I feel like him holding on to this story is an extension of that, of trying to hold on to a piece of himself that he doesn't want to have to share. He doesn't want to maybe lose by giving it away type thing. I find it to be quite poignant, actually.
I'm part of me thinks that could be the reason why they decided to cut that part out. To say, okay, well, maybe the persona that he is currently presenting, doesn't make sense for him to tell more about himself. Here, even he doesn't want to talk about the rose bushes and his wife that he wants to keep to himself. But in the novelization, he tells part of the story and then keeps part to himself. But here, it's like, okay, I'm keeping everything to myself. Mm-hmm. I can sort of understand that also from that perspective.
Yeah, I think it makes... I kind of wish he said more, but it makes thematic sense right. That he does not.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I love what we talked about yesterday about the baseball field and stuff like that. I mean, that's just a great... it's great writing. But the question is whether it's appropriate for someone like... if it's appropriate for Miller's character or not, that's what it comes down to. So.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah. I think it works.
Right. And then we get a shot of Ryben, Horvath, and Mellish again on the stoop. And we see that, these guys are just sitting and waiting. They don't really have much to do. Horvath is playing with his gun. With his pistol, and we see Mellish checking the bullets in all of his clips, to make sure that they're aligned properly and stuff like that. And then we get a shot of Upham, looks like he's singing along with what's going on and stuff like that. And again, it's as you mentioned, this scene is just great because we see how these guys are just trying to bide the time while they're waiting for the Germans to show up. You know, yeah. As I've mentioned, we never know how long, they're waiting. You know, it could be that these guys have been waiting for hours. It could be for days. Who knows? You know, we're not really sure because the timeline's a little fuzzy. I mean, we know that that this part of the story begins on June 9th. And spoiler alert, I believe that Miller dies on the 13th, if I remember correctly. And if that's the case, so there's only a total of 4 days for this entire part of the story of them searching for Ryan to happen. So.
Yeah. And, you know, they do montage through it as well, like all the setup in the town. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. We talked about that 2 weeks ago that it reminded me of like an A-Team montage.
Mm-hmm. But it's a good montage.
Yeah. It was just missing the music, you know. You're talking about the 18 movie. Or you're talking about, one second, what's a good montage? This movie or the 18?
This movie.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, most episodes of the 18 where they do a montage setup is also pretty fun. But this one's very effective, I think.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about last week's shows probably, but all those sequences where Miller's basically guiding them through setting up the town is pretty great.
Yeah, for sure. And because, again, we touched upon this a little bit 2 weeks ago, but the whole idea of him doing that is to give us a little bit of foreshadow as to what can we expect during the upcoming battle. You know, and I love the way that they do that. You know, they show us all these little things, and later on we're going to actually see them in action. You know, that type of thing. So I like what they do there. And then the shot changes, and we see Miller, still sitting on his chair, and you can see like two soldiers behind him that are having like a conversation and smoking, you know, again, just to show that this is downtime. None of these guys they don't know what to expect at this point, and they're just making the best of what they have, you know, for the time being. And I like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like just trying to find some moments of being human in between what they've been through and what they're about to go through. It's very touching, very poignant.
Yeah, for sure. Now, did you notice that Miller looks at his hand for a second?
Yeah, this is actually one of my favorite details of the whole movie, is that he spends most of the movie checking his hand, and it's shaking when they're not in combat. But whenever he is in combat, he's like rock solid. And I love the little detail that like he notices his hand has stopped shaking before he seems to notice the sound of the approaching tanks. I thought that was a really great detail.
Right. I mean, it's like that they say that, dogs can predict earthquakes and stuff like that, you know, that type of thing. Not that I'm calling you a dog. I'm just talking about the premonition aspect of it or someone who has like some sort of injury. You know, when the weather gets bad, they know that they know it's going to rain or stuff like that.
You know, yeah, so I think to be a little more specific, I think it's just that like at that point the tanks are approaching, and he probably feels the rumbling of the tanks before he can hear it. And I just like the idea that his body knows what's coming before his mind does. And that also plays back into, you know, how much has he changed? Like what has changed since he went to war? And this is one of those little things that, like, you know, his body is, you know, primed and ready for battle before he even knows he is. It's a nice little detail.
Yeah. Sure. And then after seeing them for a few seconds, it goes back to the stoop where we see, Melish Horvath and Ryben on the stoop and Upham on the side. Now, I love the framing of the shot because, you know, we see on the middle right side of the screen, the trio of guys sitting there. And then in the center of the screen, we have Upham sitting by himself, basically. And then on the left-hand side of the screen, we have the phonograph. You know, and the music is still playing. You know, we still can hear Edith Piaf, sing and stuff like that. So it's great to show. It basically shows us three, you can split the screen into three parts, and you see, camaraderie on the one hand, then you see loneliness on the other hand, and then you hear the music. So again, it once again shows how much of a genius Spielberg is to give us shots like this.
Yeah, and then I think it's in this minute as well where I watched it last night, so I can't remember off the top of my head, but it's in this minute where at the tail end of it, the music cuts out as the sound of the tanks cuts in, right? Is that the end of this minute or the beginning of the
No,
next one? I
it's
can't
this minute.
remember.
It's this minute. We're almost there.
Yeah.
We still have like another 20 seconds till we get there. But they start. You see that they all are sensing something. And they all look towards the right hand side, and but we can't yet hear anything. We hear something really distant, something very, very small, very distant. And we're not really sure what it is, but they're all looking around and they sense something. And immediately Horvath picks up his rifle, which is a little funny because he did have his pistol in his hand a few seconds ago, but now he no longer does. He's quickly he's somehow put his pistol away. And then they all stand up and they all face to the right, looking for something. And then at this point both Milosh and Ryben also pick up their guns. And then the shot changes again, and we see Miller reacting to the whole thing. He basically almost falls off his chair. The way that he jumps out of his chair, trying to figure out what's going to be happening, and he like stands up. And then at this point, that's when we hear what you just mentioned earlier, that the music just screeches to us to a stop. Which probably means that Upham went and turned off the music. Even though we do see for a second, you can see that Upham is standing closer to the to the phonograph as everyone starts getting ready to go into their positions and stuff like that. So it made me think about the fact that, okay, here we have they're playing a record player. They're playing a record on a record player, a vinyl record, and it just then like screeches to a stop. And I don't know if you had records when you were a kid, but the thing that was the most annoying was when records were skipping or when they got scratched and stuff like that. So it made me wonder, like, what are the different types of things that can ruin a record?
Well,
Do you have any thoughts?
like physically, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, physically. Well, physically, I mean, basically ruin it to the point that you can't listen to it. That type of thing.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, scratches, and dragging the stylus across the, like, somebody, whoever did it, like, clearly knocks the stylus off the record pretty violently. That kind of thing can ruin part of a track,
Well,
on a
I think it's
record.
done here. I do think it's done here to show us how abruptly everything has changed.
Yeah.
I think that's the
Yeah,
whole thing.
it works really
Yeah,
well too.
but you would think that Upham would have a little more sympathy for the record, and that he
So I
wouldn't necessarily
actually,
do that.
I would actually assume that it wasn't Upham that did it, to be honest. I would assume that it was one of the other guys. I would assume that Upham was, didn't take action when he needed to in that moment. I assume it's one of the other guys who was just like, right, we got to get to business, and just like knocked the stylus off or knocked the whole thing over or something like that, whilst Upham looked on. And at this point he still hasn't grown into a man, as it were. He's still quite innocent, and I feel like I feel like it probably wasn't him who did it. I think probably somebody pushed past him and knocked it off
Right. Well, I
instead.
was gonna say what I can imagine in my mind is that Upham started walking towards the record player to go turn it off, and then someone pushed him out of the way and just abruptly did that.
Yeah.
That's what I can envision of what they do there. Okay. Any other idea of things that could damage or destroy besides scratching
Oh, I
Star Wars?
mean, any amount of heat dropping, cracking. I mean, the other big thing that I noticed, I have records now because I inherited some of them from, or inherited, he's not passed, but like I got some from my dad, and some of them are just old and moldy and dusty, and they have to be cleaned, and that can ruin a record if you do it wrong. Yeah, they're pretty fragile things, beautiful things, but fragile things.
Yeah. So the list here is, so the number one reason is scratching. The second is heat and sunlight, because they can easily if get warped or distorted if they're in the heat too much. I mean, you're supposed to basically store your records in a cool, dry place that's away from sunlight.
And for anyone who's listening,
thankfully here in Rommel, there isn't that much sunlight.
I was going to say too, for anyone who's listening, if you have records, do not store them in the sleeves they came in either. Like obviously the outer like gatefold sleeve, yes, but the inner sleeve you should replace with something that's 100% vinyl, and because they will last longer if you do that.
Okay, well that was number three. Number three on the list is PVC sleeves.
Yeah.
So apparently the type of sleeves that they used to, you know, sell them in are can cause a lot of damage to both the record and also to the sleeve itself, you know, putting them together and stuff like that. So yeah. You know, because the PVC sleeves are usually able to trap moisture, especially if you're in humid areas and stuff like that, and you know, this will cause mold or mildew, like what you just said, that apparently that's some of the things you got from your father that had you know, mold on them. So now we know why.
Yep.
And so the next one is improper storage, which basically means you know, a lot of people store them horizontally instead of vertically. You're supposed to store them vertically so that they you're supposed to keep them in like crates or shelving units or record storage solutions designed to hold them on, because they also distribute the weight evenly. Huh. And then less pressure on them, because if you stack them, there's pressure on them, and that could also cause problems.
Yeah, that makes sense. I didn't realize anyone would store them that way, to be honest. But yeah, that makes sense.
Well, maybe people don't, because you know, they know better. Maybe they've read this article that tells you not to do it. I don't know. And the final thing on here is poor cleaning practices. That you know, when you clean them, you should you know, you can scratch them a little too easily if you don't do it properly. You're supposed to, you know, people sometimes would use rough brushes and or abrasive cleaning pads or different types of chemicals that can also scratch it and stuff like that, which is never good, because it can degrade also the sound quality and things like that. So the question that came to mind after thinking of all these things is, if you make sure that you're doing everything right with your records, how long do you think a record could last?
Oh, I mean, decades. It lasts a good long time if you take care of them. I'm sure there's an upper limit on that, but I couldn't tell you what it is. But like, I have records in my life that my father purchased in the 60s, and they still work. So I'm assuming multiple decades.
Right. Well, according to this article, under ideal circumstances, they can last for over 100 years.
And yeah, again, that makes sense.
No one's been able to prove that yet, because they haven't had. Have they? They've had records. Maybe not the same type of records for 100 years.
Yeah, I remember when I was young, my grandparents had, I can't remember where they came from, but somebody brought some records over at one point that were like old timey recordings. This is like in the 90s. So these were recordings from like the 30s.
Right.
And they still played and worked fine. So I'm assuming if those are still around somewhere, and they may not, probably aren't, to be honest, but if they were, I'm sure they would still work.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there were records when I did It's a Wonderful Life. So we talked about records a little bit. So it is possible that interesting. I just now made the connection that's from. That was taking place in the late 20s, early 30s.
Mm-hmm.
Those things. So that's almost 100 years from now, 100 years ago. So I wonder if any of those would work or not.
Interesting. I'm sure they do. As long as they've been taken care of, I'm sure they still work right. Great.
That's true. And at this point, the action begins. You know, Miller then runs off. And then we see Mellish and Henderson run to their post, or towards their post. And then, we see everyone starting to get ready for this fight. And we even see Miller then put on his helmet and get closer to Ryan. So, things are heating up. We're almost at the point where these guys, within mere seconds, are able to be completely ready to take on this unseen but heard very loudly enemy who's on his way.
Yeah, this is a sequence where the sound design is incredible. Like we're gonna talk about this more in the next couple episodes too. But like just the way that this whole sequence uses sound, I think, is incredible.
Yeah, it really is. Because again, the as we talked about earlier, the some of the sounds are things that we don't hear. It's the characters here, and mm-hmm. but based on the way that they're looking and stuff like that, you can hear the muffled sounds in the background. You have to somewhat strain your ear to hear some of it the first time. But once you know it's there, you possibly already hear it, that type of thing.
So and then it also sort of very slowly but surely builds, not in this minute, but through the rest of this week's episodes. It's going to slowly but surely get louder and closer. Like, it's really masterfully done.
Yeah. Yeah, they do a great job of getting everything, to make us believe that this is what, something is getting closer and closer. So, I like the way they do that. Very cool. Okay, that's all I have for this minute. Did you have anything else you wanted to say about this minute?
No, we've covered it all.
All right, excellent. So every Tuesday we have a segment called Tom Hanks Tuesday, where my guests will give their top five Tom Hanks performances. So, Matthew, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
It's another tough one. This is a really tough assignment in this season of your show, man. Like, is everyone involved is so good. But I'm going to say that my number five is the actually fairly recent film Captain Phillips, in which he plays a freighter captain on a ship that is taken by pirates. At the time, he was nominated, I believe, for at least a Golden Globe for it. I can't remember off the top of my head, but it's just one of those ones where films where he shows up and just reminds us all that he's an incredible actor, especially toward the end when he's going through like the recovery of the experience.
Mm-hmm.
Number four, another recent one, I'm going to say Cloud Atlas, which is, I know this film can be quite divisive, but I think he's low key wonderful in it. He has to play several different parts, and they're all very different, ranging from very dramatic and somber to very cartoonish and evil. And I can't think of another actor who could have pulled that off quite so well, just based on his history of like his comic beginnings and his, not dramatic turn in the 90s, really lent itself. His whole history lends itself to that kind of performance. For number three, I'm going to go to a proper 90s classic, which is probably, you won't be surprised to learn where most of the rest of my film choices go, but I really love him in A League of Their Own, in mm-hmm. which he plays the sort of grizzled older baseball coach to the women's team. And really, that character has such a great arc of not believing to believing in what they're doing. And also some of his best delivered comic lines in his career. And then at number two, I'm going to put this film, Saving Private Ryan, which is, I think, one of his deeper performances, one of the ones with the most nuance, one of the ones with, and the most relevance to the most people as well. You know, there are lots of people in the 90s. The story of this film was often that, you know, people walked out of the film because it was too real, veterans in particular, at the beginning and the end. And I think that a lot of that probably wouldn't be true without Spielberg's direction, but I think a lot of it wouldn't be true without Tom Hanks' performance being very true to life and very human in the film. And then last but not least, I'm going to put at the top of my list, Philadelphia, in which is, you know, one of his Academy Award winning performances, one of Great Depth, Great Sorrow, directed by the brilliant Jonathan Demme. And, you know, it was a very important film in the 90s as well for representation and for just awareness of HIV and AIDS. And it was probably the first time, this one came before Forrest Gump, so it was the first one he won, and I think it was the first time people really realized that, like, oh, this Tom Hanks guy, he can actually really act. And that is a film that, if you're not crying by the end, then I don't fully believe that you're a human being, because it's such a beautiful performance.
Yes. Okay, excellent. Thank you very much for that list. So, Matthew, why don't you once again tell people where they can find you?
Yeah, the easiest way to find me, once again, is to check out my personal portfolio website. You can find links to all my recent writing and podcast appearances there, and the website is stretched.ca. You can also find me on the socials. I am at MatthewAF in most places, most actively on Threads and Blue Sky. And then last but not least, you can also check out, I'm just going to shamelessly plug again, the local critics group that I helped co-found in the last 18 months called the Cascadia Film and Television Critics Association, which you can find at cascadiacritics.com.
All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, movieroundminute.com. And if you feel like sending me an email, you can send it to movieroundminute@movierob.com. Net. So, until tomorrow, earn this.
My solitude, you